Coming up October 8th at the Bray Improv.
Big ass show coming up, right?
Big ass show.
Big ass show.
Big ass titties.
Furry ones, too. Big furry titties. Big eyes. No legs.
Sounds so hot.
That's true. It's coming up October 8th at the Bray Improv.
That's right.
11 o'clock. Now, normally that's normally the Schmimprov night at Maverick, but so we're going to be dark at the Maverick on that night. So go to the Bray instead of the Maverick.
Help us pack the house there at the Bray Improv. It's going to be two Schmimprovers versus two all puppet players.
Yeah, Patrick Hine and Jason Booth. Some cream of the crop there. Those guys are both very good. These shows continue to go well over there. We may become a regular staple. So
I mean, that's a really good slot, too. 11 o'clock on a Saturday night.
Absolutely.
The great thing about the Bray Improv is you got table service, waiters, beer food.
Booze, food. You can get your tickets at www.improv.com/comedyclub/Brea or go to www.improvschmimprov.com and follow a link there, probably.
Follow the links
or find either one on Facebook. You can get free tickets a lot through Facebook for Bray Improv. They do that a lot. They'll throw out those free ticket offers because, you know, you still got to pay two drink minimum, but keep your eyes open for the...
That's where I'm going to get my ticket.
You are listening to Schmimcast, a behind-the-scenes look at Improv Schmimprov, Orange County's most popular late-night improv comedy show, from the perspective of its cast members and creators. For the latest episodes of Schmimcast, please visit www.schmimcast.com. To email us with your questions, comments, and requests, please shoot an email to
schmimcast@aol.com.
You can also hit us up on Twitter at the call sign Schmimcast. And, of course, you can always come see Improv Schmimprov every Friday and Saturday night at 11 p.m. at the Maverick Theater in Fullerton, California. For information on upcoming Improv Schmimprov shows, please visit ImprovSchmimprov.com. And now, the show must go on. So on with the show.
The following program contains scenes and language of a frank and explicit nature. Viewer discretion is advised.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, fans of Improv Schmimprov comedy all over the world, you are listening to Schmimcast, the Improv Schmimprov podcast. That's right, I am your host, Nicholas McGee. We have a fantastic episode for you, episode number 10. Who would have thought we would have made it to episode number 10? But the fates had it that there would be a 10th episode, and here it is, ladies and gentlemen. And we have a fantastic guest, ladies and gentlemen. This is the comedic Master Hine.
I think Patrick would be the Master Hine.
He is the Master Hine. He is the comedic mastermind behind Improv Schmimprov, a director, writer, actor, fight choreographer, an amazing improver, a theater owner, a veritable mage of the stage, a great friend of mine for over a decade who has stuck with me as a roommate through thick and thin, through the ugly and the super bad. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome, he can attest to all of this, ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Mr. Nathan McCarrick.
Yay! That's me! I'm the mage of the stage.
You are the mage of the stage.
I am Gandalf the Grey.
You literally are. You do everything.
I do a lot.
Like, seriously, when Nate puts up a show, he does the lights, he does the sound, the music, he acts all the parts out. He gets actors, but he could literally replace any of them on the stage.
Somehow I have ended up on stage in almost all of my shows, though. Usually, if there's an actor that's missing a weekend, or I just want to be a goblin, somehow I do end up filling in.
It's so awesome, though. I love it. It's just like you never know when he's going to show up. Like, I've been in several of your shows, and on stage, I just never know. Like, someone, I just saw, like, oh, there went Nate.
It's like when you see Peter Jackson wandering around in the background of the Lord of the Rings films. You're like, what? He's the director. He's not supposed to be in that. What is he doing? M. Night Shyamalan. Oh, man. Now I sound like I'm M. Night Shyamalan. He puts himself in everything.
Well, yeah. Oh. But that's... He can't act, though.
Right? No, he cannot. He also can't direct.
So yeah.
I'm hoping there isn't a corollary.
I don't think so. But that's great. Does Peter Jackson actually really show up in
that? He's got. I don't know if he did it in his all movies, but in Fellowship, he's like some dude outside the Prancing Pony.
Awesome.
I know in Return of the King, he's like the pirate captain. When they go and get, and then I forget where he is in. I think he just like, I think he's someone that just dies in Two Towers. I think he's in Helm's Deep and he gets stabbed with an arrow or something.
At first, when you talked about it, I thought it was just like him behind, like, you know, eating the craft services, just like with a coffee and a donut. just hanging out in the background.
Oh, like, we missed
wow,
that one.
That made it in the cut. That's so awesome.
In the extended editions, you're like, oh, we still didn't edit that out.
What? You know, this was like, there's so much to cover that we could possibly cover.
We could spend half an hour on each of those things you just mentioned.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Who wants to hear about our life as roommates?
Nobody.
Let's talk about all the bad roommates we've kicked out over
oh
the years.
Oh, God. Yeah, there's been so many. We shouldn't go into that.
We probably should. Sue us. I doubt they're really listening angry. To us.
We're not. Probably not. Probably not.
Yeah. If that comes up, we won't use their names. We'll call them Dickhole.
Remember Dickhole? So I guess we should probably start at as far back as we can remember.
Mm.
For me, I can remember. I remember when I first met you. I think it was UCI.
Yeah.
And you were probably last.
That's University of California, Irvine, everyone.
That's right. If we're not trying to be like a bad Asian impression, be like, oh, UCI!
Which is it's the right place to do bad Asian impressions.
It really
UCI.
Is. It really is. But we were in the theater department.
That's
where
right.
There were just a couple Asians.
Well segregated from the Asian population. We had a bridge and everything. They went to the theater department and they didn't come over here.
That's right.
Yeah. And we didn't want them to.
That's right. Stay away from us. There's no income in this side of it.
I'm glad we're 10 minutes in and we've gone racist
already. Yeah, I know. This is going well. I started it with the UCI joke.
Right? Well, they started it, really. They started by attacking Pearl Harbor. Anyways, right. So we were both in the theater department.
That's right. No, I remember you were just like, it seemed to me like when you were first there, you and Shaggy, Christopher Wolf, mm-hmm. were just like always next to each other. Like, I just remember that like these two freshmen and they were like, had so much energy and just like crazy energy. And like, you guys got cast in something like the second you walked on campus, like you were characters that worked off of each other.
We were doing, comedy, right? We got cast in a show called The Miser of Mexico.
That's right.
And there was a role called Tantan, and the director liked both of us, so he split the role of Tantan into two characters, Tan and Tan, and we were just like twins who would share the role and like do things together. It was really funny, and that was it was a great start.
That's just a fond memory of seeing you guys together. You're like, you just like seem like someone threw you on canvas, and you were like, yes, I'm ready. We're like, give us stuff to do. Like, we have tons of energy. We will never sleep, and we will write and act and direct and build things.
Well, that's what and you did the same thing. That's what I liked the UCI was that, I mean, there was lots of opportunity, but you could also make your own opportunity. Like,
yeah.
If you were bored, you just say, all right, I'm going to do a show. And mm-hmm. you go and do a show. Like, well, I mean, that's what we did all the time there. So that's how we did Finn, you know?
Right.
Well, so what was our first show together then?
Oh my God. I don't know. So I was like close to graduating when you guys got there.
Yeah.
Like I but 2 years or just 1 year?
I think it was 2 years.
2 years.
You were there. Because you directed Hamlet.
Yeah. And I didn't do a lot of acting that year. So I remember directing Hamlet, and then I remember Chris helped me out with that with like lights or something. I don't know.
Yeah, probably. I remember having to.
Was it?
That must have been you directed Hamlet my first year then, because I remember spending a day consoling a girl who didn't get cast as Ophelia. She was dead, and like the whole day long, all she would do is just cry about it.
Oh God!
And I was like, oh, theater people, huh? So that must have been my freshman year, I think. No, well, maybe not. Maybe it was my second year. I don't remember. But then you did Venetian's Physician's Magician, which
That's
I
right.
wasn't
that
in.
That was near the end of that year,
but I was
close
to being in it. That sounds great, right? I was almost in a show. Well, that guy's popular.
Who consoled you?
He thought he did good in the audition. This guy's famous.
Yeah, it was Guys and Dolls was first show of the year.
Mm.
I did, was it Whirligig that year?
Well, Whirligig, yeah, I wasn't in it, but I did the set for it, so we were definitely, I wonder if that was the first
show.
Were
you in the Sinbad and the Land of the
Amazons? I was in Sinbad and the Land of the Amazons.
It might have been that show.
Sinbad and the Land of the Amazons.
That was so awesome.
Was a ridiculous show. It didn't take place in a theater.
Nope.
In the middle of UCI, there's mm-hmm. this big park called Aldrich Park, and Sinbad and the Land of the Amazons had the audience show up at one random place in the park, and every scene would be somewhere else in the park, and we would lead the audience from scene to scene, and there would be like, and we were all dressed as pirates, and we'd be like hiding behind the trees.
They were
and,
like, there were weren't there guides like every, after, there were like 20 scenes, and after every scene, they were like, "All right, walk over here."
Yeah, and they'd walk to the next one, and they and we'd be running from scene to scene. Yeah. You know, or like, you know, usually you're not in the next scene, so you'd run to the scene that's two scenes later, so they hopefully they don't see you running around the park. But it was just a big fight show. We just, had these huge fights in the park. They weren't huge. I mean, they showed each fight was probably like a minute. But you didn't you have to like fall, did you fall down like a big rock staircase something like that? You were like the pirate captain.
You
I
explain
remember.
A lot.
Oh no! I know what it was. I had to climb down that staircase.
Oh jeez.
Yeah, but yeah, I just sneak staircase. Up behind them, and so it wasn't even a staircase. Yeah. It was more like a rock wall, like a and me and whoever someone else we had to like sneak down that rock wall while the audience was watching something at the bottom of the scene. But I remember you being a pirate captain, and you were just like screaming. And I remember my friend turning to me and be like, "How does he not ruin his voice? Like everything you said was like this, sir."
I know. Yeah, no. that was luckily it was like it was one scene and it wasn't like I died at the scene.
You did die.
Yeah. That's literally like every role I play on stage almost is that like I come on stage and I scream for a minute and then someone kills me. It's pretty true. Like I know I did that in Get Smart. That just closed.
Yeah,
like, I was a doctor. Like I came on and like I got my leg broke.
Right.
And got knocked out. Uh-huh. And then in the next scene, I get killed. So
I don't think I've ever killed you in one of my shows.
No, you did. I think so. I'm pretty sure you did. Like wait. Well, Bilbo doesn't die.
Bilbo clearly doesn't die.
But
Trelawney doesn't die. Captain Flint.
Right?
Captain Flint.
Yeah, Captain, that's right.
And that's the same thing. You came in the first scene. Rawr, and again, you were a pirate captain.
Yes.
That's that we were going full circle to Sinbad. We didn't even realize it. I hope everyone's following along while we self-reference these shows that they clearly.
Like, oh yeah, Sinbad.
Captain Flint.
Yes. So it was probably the Sinbad was our first show.
That may have been our first show.
I imagine. Yeah. That was really interesting. I mean, like, I like the idea behind that, doing a show outside and then it's one location and another location.
Yeah. No scenery. Yeah. You don't have to build anything because you just travel from site to site.
Yeah, we should do that here now. Yeah. Downtown Fullerton.
Right.
God, that would not work.
Here's the scene at the Tuscany Club.
Yeah.
This scene is called Douchebags. Yeah.
This is where the douchebags beat up other douchebags for no reason.
Girls can sing karaoke just so that they can get banged later. That's the name of our show.
Oh, shit. Now I snorted. That's good. We just need Shelly here so she can snort.
Shelly's listening like, what the fuck?
You
I
assholes.
Didn't do anything. I was at home, and they called me out and snorting.
I guarantee if she was listening, she would snort.
She probably snorted.
What? We have a friend, Shelly, who snorts when she laughs really hard. Can't stop snorting.
That sounds like she does coke now. She can't stop snorting. That girl needs an intervention.
It's funny, though. We have there's a lot of... I don't know if it's just theater, but like I noticed there's a lot of theater people...
Who laugh weird?
Yeah. Like, I'm not going to name names because I don't want people to get pissed off.
Right.
Other than Shelly, because Shelly is just Shelly. She can get mad at me later, and then she won't take me to the Foo Fighters concert.
She's taking you to a Foo Fighters
Foo
concert.
Foo Fighters!
You should not air this until after that, after you see the concert.
You're right. I'll just cut that out.
Yeah.
Or I'll just reverse, do a reverse on the name, so it's like, yeah, Shell.
No, we have Dolphin Girl.
Yeah.
I can't do it right. That's how she laughs.
Oh my God.
She knows who she is.
I don't even know who that is.
Oh, she's an APP.
Okay, I think I know what it is.
Yeah. And then we have girl.
And there's a is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a
that's the one, yeah. Like the angel falling from heaven on speed laugh.
You always know when she's at improv.
Yep.
And then there's another one that squeaks, right? She's like,
yep. Well, that's Dolphin. That's Dolphin Girl.
It's the same. It doesn't sound like laughing.
Yeah, you can always point them out when they're in the audience.
Yes. So, aside from all our fun friends.
So what was, yeah, so what are we really talking about here?
We're talking about, so improv, schmimprov.
Yeah!
And before improv, schmimprov, the improv at UCI. Well, let's even start before that. Like,
sure.
Where did you get your, like, your inspiration to be a performer? Like, ooh, where did that all begin?
Ooh, that is a good question.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I ever performed was in fifth grade, and it was like an assembly for the school, and we had to perform some, I forget what it was, but I remember I played Confucius. And I invented dynamite, and then I blew up and I died. It was like 10 seconds long, but I do remember that being the first thing I ever performed.
Oh my God, you were Confucius?
I was Confucius.
Invented dynamite.
Yeah, and I died. I feel like it was like some sort of like historical presentation to the crowd or to the school.
Was it accurate? Like, is that what happened to Confucius?
I'm pretty sure he did not blow himself up. In retrospect, I may have been teaching my fellow classmates something wrong. I don't know what I did after that. I remember in junior high, I broke my arm. That's not true. Someone broke my arm for me. But
ouch.
Yeah, you know, good. I was a little twerp, and so I got bullied, and I got my arm broke.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah,
that's really messed
right?
up.
And so I had to drop out of PE because I couldn't do physical stuff, and then they put me in something else. First, they put me in a band, and they had me playing the drums, and I'm like, I've got a broken arm. What is wrong with you? So that lasted a day, and then they put me into drama, and they were like casting their show of the semester, and I got the lead.
Nice.
And I never, you know, and my, it was my buddy was in the show, was in the class already, and he's like, oh, you gotta do this, you'll have lots of fun, maybe you can get like some tiny role. And then he got like the random bailiff who has no lines, and I got the lead, and so that was really fun. And then I just kind of stuck with it there all through high school. I always ended up, you know, being in the shows and working behind the scenes, you know, staying late and building sets and stuff. And so then when we went to UCI, and they have kind of a division between those two, like you either do one or the other, and I said, that's not fair. I want to keep doing both. So I just kept doing both. I did just as many shows where I was acting as I did when I was building or behind the scenes on, which is why to these days I still end up doing everything, because I just like it.
Yeah, and you're good at all of it. Like, I mean, I just, like, you've built some awesome sets, and, like, I mean, I totally dig, like, your stagecraft work. It's, like, so visually interesting to watch, usually. I mean, like, even, there's a lot of things about theater. You have to, like, spare things down and build things economically, and,
yeah,
you know, you're given, like, here's 4 sheets of plywood and a toilet and a phone. Do something with it, right?
Uh-huh.
And you're always able to come up with something like imaginative and like, you know, enhances the experience of the show.
I definitely try to, whenever I do a set, I try to build something that I don't know how to build yet, or I try to do something that I don't have as much experience with, so that I am constantly learning. I mean, but I'm still doing it poor man style. Like, I don't know how to weld. I need to learn how to weld. You know, and I need to start working with plaster. I need to start, because right now I'm really good with making things out of wood,
mm-hmm.
Making big and interesting shapes out of wood. I can do that, but I can't do steel yet. I got to do that. I got to start learning more crafts, because I think I'm good enough with wood, but I got to start exploring further.
Right, it just adds more to your palette that you can
have
the stage and all that.
Like when we did The Hobbit, like that thing was made in so much out of like that foam stuff, and I'm like, I've never dealt with this foam stuff before. Let's play with it. And then Monte Cristo was all about curves. I'm like, I'm going to build a set entirely out of curves,
just to
find out if I can.
Yeah, that was a cool looking set.
Yeah, it ended up looking great. I love curves on stage. I was glad I was able to do it. It's all just from doing it. I never got trained in any of this. I just did one show and then did it the next show and then kept on working at it. So whenever people say like, you're great at that, I'm like, no, I'm not. I just happened to do it. Like, anyone who just happened to do it could probably do it as well or better than me, because I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I'm just making up as I go along.
I don't know. There's definitely some experience to it, but.
Well, experience definitely, but yeah.
There's a creative force that's behind it. Damn it.
Yeah.
It's good shit. So basically, you were kind of just like, love the theater, like in high school and whatnot, and just kind of like were like, this is my home, more or less? Or
I mean,
you just kind of...
Because I was totally like AP Brainer smart kid. Mm-hmm. And I was in all, you know, all AP classes in high school and more or less set to go on smart land.
Right.
Path of life. You know, and I remember, I feel like I either finished a course early or something in high school, and I got an elective. And normally, like, when you're on the AP Smart class, you don't get electives because they're stockpiling you with stuff. And I remember I took the creative writing class at the time, and it was amazing. I was like, what? I get to be creative now? Because, you know, they don't do a great job of integrating creativity with academics a lot.
Right, right.
And, you know, there's all this focus on the school and, you know, on the tests and et cetera.
Yeah, it's like, study for the SAT.
Yeah. And I remember I always tried to be as creative as I could when we did have projects, but then when I took creative writing, I said, what? This is an entire class just about being creative? And I'd love that. And so then the next year, I dropped out of AP English. I said, no, I know how to write. I don't want to write AP English. I don't want to study that. I want to take another creative writing class. And we took, in the creative writing class that year, we were starting a literary magazine for the school. It was the first time it'd be done. And the class was probably 30 people on it, but me and like four other people and the teacher were really the ones that did all the work. And so the five of us spent the semester and we edited together this entire magazine. And I remember that was the first time I ever pulled an all-nighter working on a project, was for that project. Like, we actually went over to the teacher's house and we were up all night long. And I know it sounds weird. A bunch of high schoolers going over to a teacher's house. And trust me, he got shit for that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he was like a young and super cool teacher. He was a really cool guy.
He's like, don't mind my bathroom.
Well, when you have like five, you know, he's got these five kids over, like some of them are girls, and his computer was in his bedroom. So we're all like in his bedroom editing Photoshop files all night long. Mm-hmm. So the registrar, I think, came down on him. He's like, they're like, you can't do that.
We don't care how lonely you are. Come on, man.
There was one night where he had to leave to go on a date. And me and my buddy Kevin were still there working. We're like, all right, don't worry. We won't be here when you get back, like, we got maybe another hour worth of work we got to do on this stuff. And he's like, all right. And so he left, and then we actually went out. We bought roses, and we dropped rose petals from his front door up to his bedroom, so that when he came home with his dates, it would be all romantic for him. So we were working at getting our teacher laid, apparently. So anyways, the point
is...
It's
so funny if it was a first date. Like,
right?
This is awkward.
And, and how does he explain that? He's like, oh no, my students did that. Oh, why were your students alone in your house? Because they are! Oh, God. Oh,
that's awesome.
He ended up marrying that girl, and they had three girls.
Oh, so it worked out.
So yeah, so fortunately it went fine. So anyways, the point was that the creative world is where I learned how the value of working hard. Mm-hmm. In the academic world, you know, I never pulled all-nighters. I never poured anything into it. I enjoyed math, but you don't pull an all-nighter and get rewarded by at the end of a 5-hour calculus problem. So
to thundering applause, right?
And the whole time in high school, I was also doing theater as well. From going on from junior high, they did two shows a year in the theater in the drama department there, and I did seven shows in my 4 years there. So I was doing drama the whole time, anyways, and that was keeping me creatively active. And we had a speech and debate team, and there's an element of the speech and debate team which is more about performing arts with the interpretive duo stuff. So I was still acting that way too. So yeah, it's just more rewarding.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved smart stuff, but I loved rewarding stuff better, I guess.
Right. So then obviously you graduated, went to UC Irvine. Was there any, did you go to UCI for the drama program specifically?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
I think I applied to UC Irvine, UC Santa Barbara, and CalArts. And CalArts was like ridiculously expensive. There was no way that was going to happen.
Yeah.
And so I toured the UCSB campus, and they were all right. And then when I saw Irvine, UCSB had like one theater at the time, and mm-hmm. Irvine had six theaters, you know, and they have more now. They've built so much more since we've left. But so I just saw that and I said, oh, this is clearly the winner. My first reaction was I didn't want to go to UCI because my fakey little girlfriend in high school was also at UCI and I didn't want to go. And I was like, oh, it's going to be weird. But UCI was clearly the winner. And that's, again, like what UCI was amazing was because there was so much going on at every opportunity. Like,
Right.
If you weren't in a show, you could just do a show. And there's so many people doing shows. And if you weren't in a show, you can help out to be on someone's show.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that just kind of coasted through their 4 years, any shows, got the same degree that we got, although we have honors.
That's right.
You're talking to Nick McGee and Nate McCarrick. We both have honors in acting. That's a degree of huge value. I literally have not even picked up my diploma.
Have you not?
I have not.
I finally, once I moved in here to this nice apartment, I put it up. I have it up on the wall, finally. You never picked
it up. I wonder if they still have it on file. I wonder if I should call them.
Hopefully.
How funny. But yeah, so I did a huge number of shows at UCI.
My God, yeah, you never stopped like the second you got on campus.
I think I averaged 4 shows a year acting and like 4 shows a year working backstage and seeing stuff, which was huge at the time.
So did you do any improv before UCI or was it mostly?
You know, I remember, here's another funny story. I remember the first time I ever tried improv and it was a huge failure, huge, utter failure. It was for my junior high talent show. And I don't remember why I got it in my head that I wanted to do improv. I think maybe I had watched, maybe a stand-up comic or something like that, like interacting with the audience and just riffing. And I was like, that's cool. And I was like, I wonder if I can do that. And so for my talent, the talent show section that I was going to do, I planned on doing improv. But I mean, I'd never done it before and I didn't know what I was doing. So every time in the rehearsals for the talent show, they'd be like, and next up is Nathan. And I'd be like, all right, I'm just going to do my thing here, and they're like, all right. And I remember my teacher, Mr. Erickson, I was really good friends with, and he was worried for me. He's like, are you sure? And I was like, yeah, I think I got it.
I got this.
Right.
I got this.
So the day before the talent show, I thought to myself, well, boy, you should probably have at least something planned. Mm-hmm. Something so you can start off.
Some idea.
What I did was I built a dummy of myself, which of course looked nothing like me. It was basically a refrigerator box with a shirt thrown over it and like a wig balanced on top of that. And so when I went up, when it was my turn, I said, all right, I'm going to need a couple volunteers from the audience. And so we got the volunteers up from the audience and I said, all right, well, I'm going to need to talk to them for a few minutes. So we're going to go on to the next act and I'm going to be after that. So they closed the curtain and some like dance troupe went on. And so I was on stage and I set up this dummy of myself seated so that its back was to the audience. So they would think that I was like sitting on the stage and I had the audience members sit down next to it and like pretend they're talking to me. Mm-hmm. So then when it was my turn, the curtain opened. And so they were basically these two people talking to a refrigerator box. And then I ran on stage from off stage and like knocked the head off of the dummy. As if this was going to be some great magic act. Like, where did he come from? But he was already on stage. And they were going to be wowed. So clearly the reaction was, what? This is retarded. And I was like, all right, thank you. And then I was like, well, I've got 5 minutes to fill. So I just kind of stared at the audience and said, oh. And then I asked them to play like the music that the previous dance company had just done. And so they played that. And then I sort of just like danced.
Play the music.
Yeah.
Dance.
So I kind of danced and tried to make the other people dance too. And then it was over. And it was just terrible. And I remember afterwards, I remember like my dad, because he came to see the show. And my dad was like, well, that was interesting.
That's
and I'm
awesome.
Like, yep, that was an utter failure. Complete failure.
Oh my God, that's so funny. But I mean, like, how would you know? Like, you probably, like, they didn't even have Whose Line Is It Anyway back then.
I have no idea what I was thinking. But fortunately, it didn't scare me away. If anything, it made me say, okay, well, I guess I should have thought about that some more.
I think we should invent an improv game based on that somehow. Like, just some at your roast, we'll do that.
Right. It'll start and there'll be a dummy of me on stage. So I guess the speech team in high school counted as still kind of doing improv because you're making up arguments.
You did debate a little bit.
A little bit. Not a lot because I preferred doing the acting stuff, but I did do some and I coached it too because I was the president for 2 years. And then when we got to UCI, our buddy Eric wanted to start an improv group, Live Nude People. And so I got in on that at the ground floor. When he left it to me and Shaggy and Lindsay, and we ran it for 2 more years and turned it from what it was into something that was much bigger. Like when Eric was running Live Nudes, it was kind of kept small in the drama department, and then we ended up kind of upping the production value and mm-hmm. making it, and then everyone from across campus was coming, and that thing just turned into a huge success.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, I just remember some of those nights you just packed the place like there was nowhere to sit.
Absolutely,
like, literally.
And that was that show was like, didn't really have like one theater that we lived in. We were kind of at the whim of what theater was available based on what shows were going on. Sometimes we would be, you know, in like the little theater, which housed like probably 160 mm-hmm. maybe. But then there's like one time that we did it in remember the Claire Trevor? The Village Theater.
Oh, wow. You did it in there?
Yeah, back then the Village. Oh, wow. And that place, we just got to see 400 or 500.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember that was one of the first lessons we learned in what kind of humor travels through different crowds.
Right.
Because we realized very quickly that wit does not travel to the back row of mm-hmm. 400 people.
Right.
Because it's just too big. The only thing that translated in that size crowd was humping humor. Like, so the whole, I mean, like if we had been mic'd, that would have been something else. But
But
we were, you know, we weren't mic'd, so we were just trying to shout. So all it was the whole show was just like sex humor, sex,
yeah.
because you can't, I mean, that's what Shrimp Rob is now anyway. and still I think we still turned people away from that from that 400 seat theater. I mean, the show was free.
And
it was once every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's inside a campus where people are living in the campus anyways. It was very easy for them to get to. So,
and there's like, there's nothing that exciting to do, I think, on those nights.
Yeah.
Like that, really.
No, not at all.
Especially for free, you know?
I mean, everyone's a little bit too young, as far as the undergrads go, to really be drinking on campus there. There weren't any bars or anything that you could do.
Right.
So, yeah, we were the only thing to do. So we did our 4 years there, and then when we graduated, you, me, and Shaggy, and Lindsay, and Jamie, and Jacob.
That's right.
Yep, and yep. Patrick.
And Patrick.
We said, well, that was fun.
The Master Hein. Call him that from now on.
We all said, well, that was fun. We want to keep doing it. So we met
in my living room. Yeah.
and in Jacob's living room.
Yep.
And on alternating weeks, and we would just play games for the fun of it. And then we started the Laugh Kitchen.
That's right.
Which was basically the Laugh Kitchen.
We wanted to do it. We were like, how do we get this out to people? Like, how are we going to do this?
We think we're funny. We want other people to see it, but we don't have any place to perform. So we invited people to our houses while we performed. and so basically the rule was everyone's admission to our house was some ingredient,
mm-hmm.
Be it a can of beans or a cup of Frosted Flakes. And during the show, the host would cook something in the kitchen involving all of the ingredients. And at the end of the show, the losing team had to eat whatever it was that the cook had made. We did that. Was it our 500th show for Schmimprov? I think we brought that back.
Definitely. I remember we did that once.
Yeah, because I remember I had a hot plate set up behind the Santa Claus set, and I was cooking stuff back there. And I think Enrique drank this huge vat of bean mixed with Chinese food or something like that.
Well, that's what he normally eats.
That's so true.
It wasn't that big deal.
So Laugh Kitchen lasted like 3 episodes.
Oh, the Laugh Kitchen. We could just never get it right. Like,
no.
It never worked out right.
No.
We were like, we'll put this on cable access somehow.
Oh, we totally didn't want to do that.
Yeah. But no, it never happened.
And then we ended up getting word from a friend of a friend that Brian Newell had set up a theater in order to do his show at the King. But then he realized, well, I built a theater just for this one show, and now I have to do other shows with it. So... So we went and me and Lindsay, I think, went and met him. Oh, no, you met him first. You went and saw the Berubian Improv Theater, right?
I did see that, yes. And I saw the, he was doing Amadeus at the time.
Saw Amadeus. And
that's
you,
right.
And you were
saw Amadeus
Brian.
And met him there. And then I did go see the Berubian Improv guys.
And so you set up the meeting with me and Lindsay. with Brian, and then me and Lindsay went in with like a DVD of our stuff, and we sold him. And the selling point was that he was doing Rocky Horror Show, and he didn't know about the prop bags and about the audience interaction, which is what Live Nude had handled at UCI the year earlier for their production of Rocky Horror. So we said, listen, we've already done this. We'll do this for you if we get to perform at 11. And then, boom, we just lit off.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, we were the hottest thing in town.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the block, all we had to do was open the door and be like, hey, show, come on in. There's just millions of people walking by that front door.
Best way to advertise ever. Just
couldn't have been better.
Pull them in. Like, and there's just tons of, there were tons of people there just walking by. A lot of younger people had nothing to do whatsoever on, you know, Friday night. They're just hanging out at the mall.
And for like the hour before the show, we would stand in the store window. We would put a little light on someone in the store window, and they would wear like silly glasses and just make faces of the people walking by, and instantly we just get huge crowds just watching us stare at them in the middle of the block, and then someone else on the outside walks up and gives them flyers for the show, and place is sold out.
Best venue for something
like
this.
Yeah, can't get better than that. I mean, and back then, that place sat like 120, I think, first the block. I think we dropped down to 80 when we resized. I forget the numbers. Either way, like, we were still packing it.
Obviously
we're still packing the Maverick right now, but that's, you know, we only fit 80 people in there at a time.
Like, if anything, I would say you've done a great job at the Schmimprov evolution. I mean, all the gimmicks, you know, that we started in the beginning have evolved into bigger and better gimmicks, like Improv Idol, Schmocktoberfest. I mean, all these things we do year round, the Schmimprovathon,
March Madness. I really love the countdown that we did, the A to Z countdown in the summer this year.
That was totally cool. I liked it because it was really challenging.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, crap, I don't remember any of these games. Like, you really had to focus and be like, oh, what? How do we make this one work again? I don't know. It made it less relaxed of a situation, which is probably good, though, because, you know, I think sometimes maybe it's too relaxed and we're just like, we're just going to mess around and on stage. And, you know, it gives more variety for the audience, obviously.
But yeah, I thought it was fun to find games that we had kind of forgotten about and be able to say, hey, that's actually a really good game. We should keep that around. Like we reinvented the Time Machine game when we went through it. I think Time Machine's finally a good game now. It was a bad game for years and years, but we kind of fixed it on this last run through. I mean, we started off so simply. Like, we used to have team captains. We used to bring team captains on stage, and they would get prizes because Jacob had so much junk in his garage they wanted to get rid of. And
that's right.
The wheel's pretty much gone now. We kept the wheel for a long time.
Did it get destroyed again? I mean, it's got. There's been a couple different wheels, right?
But the first wheel we burned. Yeah, the first wheel we took out to the desert and we burned. The current wheel, it still exists, but we don't use it. I think that what we've got going now is smarter than the wheel. Like, the wheel was the wheel we started off because we were, you know, we wanted to prove that we were improvising it and that you could spin it for random. But in order to make sure that all those games were playable, like, they were all kind of like the more basic games. They were all games that everybody knew. And as Schmimprov developed, you know, and we got better and better at what we were doing and more Schmimprovier, like, as our games became less about let's do a simple scene and more about the presentational quality that is Schmimprov. That's this kind of, like, we have this feeling of, you know, guys slugging it out on stage. Not literally, but that's kind of the feeling of what I think Schmimprov is rather than just people doing improv, it's about people brawling through comedy.
Right.
Is the way I see it. As that happened in our shows, and then we ended with these couple basic scenes, the wheel was always, I thought, kind of a disappointing ending. Mm-hmm. So I think what we're doing now with the Game-O-Matics, with the challenges, I think that's a lot more fun to end the show with than the wheel ever was.
Yeah.
Because it keeps the arc of the energy going higher rather than all of a sudden that dip.
And you never know what kind of crazy ass game someone's going to come up with.
That's just the game we played last night we did an ArgueBeast Game-O-Matic where you invent the game one word at a time and then play it. And my team played one called Hot Air Balloon Tragedy, I think. And the scene was me and Lindsay and Justin. We were in a hot air balloon, and we have to, the three of us had to guess what powered the hot air balloon. And since we're all guessing, the only clues we could get was from the audience going ah or oh. And to make it harder, we also built into the game that throughout the course of the scene, Drew can call on one of us to have to leap from the hot air balloon and die.
Oh my God!
So you know, 1 minute in, Lindsay is forced to jump out of the hot air balloon and die, and 2 minutes in, Justin had to jump out and die, and then I'm left alone in the hot air balloon, which ended up being powered by orgasms.
Oh my God.
So much fun. Oh, I loved it. That was great.
That is pure improv right there. That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, the Argybeast Game-O-Matics. Yeah, this is so sweet. We asked some questions from our Facebook fans.
Facebook!
We have a Facebook page. If you didn't know, come and check it out. There's all kinds of fun stuff. We post events. Everything coming up for the best and brightest of Improv Schmimprov. Here's the first question. It comes from AJ. One of our biggest fans.
Hello, AJ. How are you? Hi, comes AJ. All the way from another country because he's stranded there. Poor AJ.
He says, if you could only be a geek / fan of just one thing, what would it be?
Ooh. Well, this clearly we should itemize that I am a huge geek. First of all, I have done profoundly geeky things in my time. I have built a room-sized Risk board. I once re-edited Back to the Future in chronological order.
Oh my god.
Or all three of them, the three movies into one 6-hour chronological order.
Did it work? Was it fun to watch?
I thought it was fun.
That's so awesome. So you started from the Old West and...
It opened up with Indians! And then, it ended, I think, how did it end? It would have ended with them leaving 2015, yeah.
Wow, that is really cool.
Yeah, that was
and
a lot of
geeky.
Fun. And
hey,
really geeky. obviously, I'm a huge fan of Farscape, which nobody has ever heard of Farscape except for people who know me and know that I talk about Farscape. Because Farscape was probably the best. For its time, it was the best sci-fi series that's ever been. Battlestar Galactica, obviously, is a really gritty and better take on sci-fi. But that's what the world was doing when Battlestar Galactica came out. We were used to these grittier TV shows by the time Battlestar Galactica was out. When Farscape came out, it was trying to do that as best as it can in the same era of Star Trek Next Generation, which, you know, Next Generation is all about in 1 hour, well, we're going to have a very simple problem and we're going to fix it and all of our plans will go perfectly well and everyone will be happy at the end of it no matter what. Don't get me wrong, love Next Generation, I grew up as a Trekkie, but from a writing perspective, it's very slow paced, it's very, everything always works, no one ever gets, is ruined, you know, in Star Trek. It's always heavy. Whereas Farscape...
Except for Wesley, who disappeared.
Wesley, thank God. Thank God the Traveler took him away and whisked him to another world for that last season. No, every time in that in the opening act of a Star Trek, if it zooms in on Wesley's face as it fades into the credits, you're like, damn it, it's a Wesley episode. Why? I remember sitting on my sofa being like, no, a Wesley episode. I'd rather have a Troy episode than a Wesley episode. But so Farscape, I mean, that Farscape was doing grittier things. They never started happily on the ship and slowly they find out what the problem was. Farscape would start off and the problem was already happening and they would explain how they got into the problem in like 5 seconds. Be like, oh yeah, these guys showed up and they started attacking us. Boom. We don't need to see that. Mm-hmm. They jumped right into the action. None of their plans ever worked. I love Farscape because they set up plans and then the plans would fail or they wouldn't even get to the plans because something else happened. Like, that's what happens in real life. And I always try to think about that when I write stuff too. I want, you know, people's plans shouldn't be what we see because you get diverted.
Right.
My favorite example of Farscape of a plan going poorly, or well, the main point of Farscape is that the main character John Crichton comes from Earth. He got sent to another galaxy. So John is us. Like, he knows our pop culture. He sees everything through our eyes. Mm-hmm. And so there's one time when he was on a spaceship or on some station, and he's with his girlfriend, and they see two guards go by, and he's like, I got an idea, and they clunk the guards over the head, they drag him into a closet, and they start taking their suits off. And then we cut back to that scene like 30 seconds later, and they're trying to put the guard outfits on, and both of them are like, these don't fit. And she's like, I'm clearly a foot shorter than this guy. And then two other guards run around the corner and start shooting him, and John's like, fuck, and then just start shooting back and run for it. Like, perfect example. Like, he's got this pop culture mentality of, oh, well, I've seen this happen in movies, and he tries to make it happen.
Right, and it fails
miserably, and the answer is run and hope you don't die.
Yeah.
It was just so brilliant. And they did some really hard things. Like, at that point, it was rare for TV shows at all, much less as sci-fi, to have like a story that lasted the entire season. It was, you know, most TV shows were still doing an episode-to-episode thing, and maybe there was some tiny thing that would be an arc throughout the entire show. Farscape had these huge things that would take place over the course of the entire season. Like, they had, I mean, I'm not going to go into it, but the answer is clearly Farscape. Even though I haven't watched an episode in years now, but as far as what I learned to respect about writing and pushing the envelope and puppets, because they used live puppets in the show. It was co-produced by the Jim Henson Company.
Really?
And so they didn't use CGI for the aliens. Like the main characters all had these huge prosthetics, really complicated makeup, and two of the characters were actually puppets. I mean, I say puppets and you think fuzzy puppets like all puppet players, but no, like complicated, you know, alien looking creatures from the Creature Workshop, and that's one place too where I fell in love with puppet work and how puppets are able to do things that humans can't, both on screen and on stage. And so as far as what I got from it, Farscape is still what I would require as in my history of I geeked out about.
Well, now you mentioned puppets and all puppet players. Mm-hmm. We should probably mention too that you are a member of the All Puppet Players.
That's correct.
Puppet troupe. Which I think is just freaking fantastic group of performers. And,
I mean, that's another
puppeteers.
That's another thing, like Shmimrov, that it was just kind of a stupid idea, and then we just tried it out. I remember Sean McNamara and I talked, you know, like 2 years ago. He was like, "What if we did a show all with puppets?" And I was like, "Yes,
was totally.
Like, yes, I'm in." Because I've always, and we talked about Hamlet. I've always wanted to do a Hamlet where the father was a puppet, like the ghost father.
Yeah.
Would be like would be controlled by like three different actors, so he can float around the stage and do things that you can't really see. And which isn't what we did with Hamlet Has No Legs. But Sean and I were like, "Do you think we could do that?" And he's like, "Yeah." And then a year later, he's like, "Remember when we talked about that?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Do you still want to do it?" I'm like, "Yes." And we didn't know how to really puppeteer at the time, and so we got our buddy, another guy named Danny, to teach us, and did a whole bunch of rehearsals of this show in Sean's living room, like felt like the Laugh Kitchen.
So
again,
awesome.
You know.
Yeah.
And then we had four shows over at the Empire Theater, and literally one second before we walked on stage, Sean and I looked at each other and like, "Well, this may be a huge flop. Like, we have no idea if this is going to sink or swim. Like, this is the first time we're going to know if this idea has any legitimacy whatsoever."
Yeah.
And we walked on, and the lights came up, and it was him and I as Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, and we didn't say a thing. All we did was our puppets were just kind of looking at the audience, and the audience just went crazy, and we were like, "Well, I think it's going to work."
Yeah.
It totally worked. Those shows sold way out. We brought Hamlet back at the Maverick, and those shows sold like crazy. And now we're doing Frankenstein Has No Legs, and we're doing the challenge matches. And APP's got tons of shows lined up for next year.
Yeah.
So,
are there any of those that you can announce yet, or no?
I'm pretty sure it's official. I'm pretty sure it's announced that we're doing Avenue Q over at Empire in January.
Awesome.
There are a few others. I don't know if they're official. I'm not sure I can actually say them. But
Avenue Q, that's huge.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing show.
As of right now, we are very likely busy all year long next year. So there's definitely a lot of things coming up for APP.
That's right. And then you're slated to direct two shows next year.
I am. Yeah, I'm going to be
so
busy.
Wow.
I'm
at least you're ahead of the game on that. I would say.
Oh yeah, no. I'm working hard on it right now. In March and April, I'm putting up a production of Robin Hood, which I'm writing myself.
So awesome!
I've written stuff before. I've never written an entire show from scratch, but I'm really enjoying that process right now. So I'm still. We had a reading of it like 3 weeks ago. Nick McGee as Friar Tuck.
That's right.
And I've still been working on it pretty much every day since then, revising the script and honing it down. And, I do lots. I direct a lot, I perform a lot. But writing something has this element of arrogance, which is really hard for me to get over. I really just feel like, I must be really full of myself if I think that something that I'm going to spend my time writing on, people are going to care about. So that's a weird one for me writing that much. But
I mean, from the read-through, it's the script is really cool. It's a really cool script.
Well, thank you.
Like, I don't want to give anything away.
Right.
You have to, people, if you're listening, come and see it. But it's a really awesome script.
I'm hoping so. It's been really fun too. I mean, I'm kind of trying to slightly reinvent the story. Mm-hmm. so it's got all the elements that people expect from Robin Hood, but it's also got some pretty, so I think some pretty cool twists.
Yeah.
And my version is largely based on the historical accuracy of what could have happened at the time. So I'm excited about that too.
Yeah.
And then I'm also bringing back The Hobbit in May, starring Nick McGee as Bilbo Baggins.
Gandalf, it's a dragon.
Bilbo Baggins. That show, I hope will not be as hard the second time.
Because we
got a lot of it down already. There's some things we're reinventing. The script's going to change a little bit. So two big shows for me next year.
What was the hard things about The Hobbit? Was it like the choreography and the puppets were the difficulties?
Boy, the puppets on that one were hard.
And then, of course, trying to direct me was probably horrible.
No way. You were the easy part. When we first had the idea for The Hobbit, it was like, well, as long as we have Nick as Bilbo, we know the show will be gold. Like, just put him in the feet, and he will make anything work. I would say the puppets were hard on that one, because we had five mega puppets in that show.
That's right.
We had the three trolls, which were 14 feet tall.
Yeah,
huge. And they were so big that two of them only had one hand because they couldn't fit on stage with the second hand. I'm gonna make more hands for them next time. They looked weird with only one hand. We had Cobb, who never worked. We had this giant effing spider. Like, when he opens up, his wingspan was like 20 feet wide.
Yeah, it was huge.
Who descended from the ceiling to attack Nick, and operated by seven marionette line runners backstage. But they couldn't see what they were doing. The lines never worked properly. He always got caught or tangled in something. Oh, Cobb was a nightmare. Two or three shows, he worked right, and he looked scary and fucking cool. The rest of them, he always like did some weird somersault coming down. There was the one show where he opened prematurely and he hung there for like half the show.
That's right. Like, what is that?
So Cobb, we're actually redoing. Cobb is going to be performed by a stilt walker this next time. I've got a stilt walker. She's going to be on four stilts, and then she'll have four more legs. So she's going to actually be a much cooler, I think, and creepier thing this time, rather than, and because she'll actually be alive, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Smaug. Smaug was also really hard. Smaug was maybe a little bit too big. Smaug's face filled up the entire stage.
It was huge.
It was like, what, like nine parts of a face operated by 17 people trying to lip sync what Glinda was doing. That was a really hard one. As much as I love the idea, I don't think we ever really, really got it. The audience was too close. They couldn't even, like, in the booth, I could see it right. I could see him.
But
any closer, you're just kind of too close. So I may be able to help that a little bit by, I think I can get him further away from the audience, and I might like shrink him up a little bit, but the puppets were definitely the hardest part. The rest of it is fun. I mean,
love all the
sword play, all the scenes. So
the fights were cool. They were so cool. That was a great experience. It's just awesome, and people really liked it.
Regardless
of, you know, anything that might not have been totally perfect with the puppets, but it was like, I don't think the audience.
No, it's one of those shows too that if you love the source material, like, you just go there wanting to love it anyways. And our version was pretty true to the book.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that a lot of people respected that.
All right, more questions.
More questions.
I got sidetracks. I'd like to talk about the theaters. Evan asks.
Evan Green?
Maybe.
What's up, Evan?
If you could have one superpower from any of the X-Men characters, past or present, what would it be, and how would you use it in your life as of now?
As of now? Oh, boy. I'll tell you what I always wanted my superpower to be.
Mm-hmm.
My dream superpower would be to freeze time.
Oh,
I think that would be the coolest superpower in the world. I don't know if there's an X-Men who does that. I don't think so.
The hero on Heroes did that.
Well, he didn't do it well enough. Here's, like, if you could freeze time, well, actually, I have two favorite superpowers. One is to freeze time. If you could freeze time, maybe, you know, you could always take all the time you want to think of a response. So you can freeze time and figure out how you want to react to something and then react properly rather than reacting poorly in life. But you could also do all kinds of things. You could rob banks. You know, you freeze time when they open up the vault, you run and you grab all the money and you leave. No one will ever find you. You could, you're 3 miles away from your girlfriend talking to her on the phone, and she says, I wish you were here. You freeze time, you run 3 miles, boom, you're outside of her apartment. Boom, how cool is that?
That'd be so cool.
Like, I think that freezing, and then when I was a kid, my favorite idea about freezing time would be, you see, like, and this goes back to me being bullied. You see the guy who bullied you, and you see him, like, walking across campus, and you're like, you know, you're like 200 feet away. So you freeze time, you run up to him, and you tie his shoes together. Then you run back to where you were, and you release time, and then he trips. But, like, the instant that he trips, you freeze time again, you run back up, and you tie his shoes normally. And then you go back and you watch again. So then he trips and he's like, what the fuck? And he's looking at his feet thinking, I tripped on something. It felt like my shoes were tied together, but they weren't. Once he gets over, he starts walking again. Then you do it again. You freeze time, you tie his shoes, and then you do the same thing. And so, and you keep on doing that for like 4 or 5 times until he's just driving himself insane. And he's like staring at his own feet, walking around like with his own feet, like 4 feet away from each other, trying to figure out how he's not able to walk anymore. And he just goes insane. And you're sitting 200 feet away laughing at him. That's what I would use time stopping powers to do.
That's pretty awesome.
My other dream power would be the ability to reverse time for like 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. So because you like ask someone a question, and they're like, you'd be like, hey, what's your favorite color? Blue. Then you reverse time and you go, your favorite color is blue. I don't really know what the practical applications are aside from probably using it in bars to get laid, which I don't need anymore, thankfully. But I think that's that. Those are my powers. I don't think those are X-Men powers. So if I had to go with X-Men powers, well, I mean, it's easy to go Wolverine because that way you don't die and you heal from stuff.
That's right.
It's easy to go Professor X so you can...
You have to read everybody's mind, right?
Right, right. I think it would be cool. I kind of want Kitty Pryde. I kind of want to just be able to ninja myself out of walls and stuff. All right, next question.
Good question. I think Evan would be very satisfied.
The correct answer is I'd be Frozone. Frozone!
Scotty asks, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Oh, man. I still feel like a kid, but I'm old now.
I know. Isn't that
We're old.
I
mean, probably not as old as Scotty, I'm imagining. I'm pretty sure which Scotty's asking. Hi, Scotty. When I was a kid, what did I want to be? I don't know what I wanted to be when I was a kid. Right now, the dream is still to eventually build a bigger theater, one that I can actually be paid to do the stuff I do rather than have it be a really expensive hobby.
Right.
Because right now, everything we do with Maverick is, you know...
Pro bono.
Pro bono. If not putting money into, you know, yeah. like all the shows I do, I always funnel my own money into because I'd rather have them look good than not look good, you know.
Right.
And all the weapons I buy, you know, mm-hmm. that's my money. I bought a whole bunch of weapons yesterday for Robin Hood online.
Oh, did you?
And I'm like, well, that's my. I mean, like, you know, the budget can't handle that. So the dream really is to be able to do this professionally. But I never want to get bigger than the ability to do both sides. Like, I don't know if I'd want to be at a big theater house, because then I wouldn't be able to direct and build the sets and have lights, because there'd be people that do that for me. So mm-hmm. I'd like to get a little bit bigger than the Maverick. I'd like to get to a place where the theater makes enough money to pay for the people that are working there. But I don't want it to be so big that I can't have my hands in everything, because that's
right. Like. It's tough because when you own a theater, you got to do like a whole season, and then you got to be like, all right, well, you know, there's probably going to be some shows that you know I'm not really even interested in. Like, you know, we got to do the musical or stuff like that. Like, I mean, I guess it just comes with the territory. Or do you just like literally do everything that you want, or you just hook yourself up with people who are like, all right, well, I got this person's going to take care of that part of the season. And
Brian and I tend to kind of overlap shows. Like he'll focus on one show, and then I'll focus on the next show, and he'll focus on one in between, and then he'll, you know, there'll be a couple shows that someone else is directing or working on. So we kind of share the duty in that way, because usually whoever's running the show is more or less running the theater for those couple weeks, because mm-hmm. the other guy's like, I'm gonna take a break.
Yeah.
I mean, I have more breaks than he does. He tends to, we'll do back-to-back directing shows and stuff where I won't. But he also, I think he has more time. He works on his magazine, but...
Yeah, yeah.
I'm still poor. what was the question?
I don't know. It was kind of...
I got sidetracked by my own poverty for a second.
It's easy to do.
Yeah.
No, I was just curious how you would like handle like a, you know, like say if you had your ideal theater, would mm-hmm. would you just pummel it with shows that were just your kind of shows?
Oh.
Or would you feel bad about having to throw in the requisite musical or something just to fill the season out?
I don't think I'd feel bad about them. As long as you've got people that are running those shows that are passionate about those shows. Like,
yeah.
Like I'm not passionate about musicals, so I wouldn't ever want to direct a musical because my heart wouldn't be in it. But if we can find people who are passionate passionate about that and who have our same work ethic, then yeah, you then they handle those shows. As long as you're handling the shows that you love, I don't think that it'll ever get tired.
Yeah.
And as long as you get the people of high enough quality that that can run those shows adequately, then that's the dream. Yeah, no, I would never want to run a theater where I am literally doing everything. I like to do everything on the shows that I do.
Yeah, yeah.
The other shows, yeah, no, I don't want to be doing every show. That would be a nightmare. Directing 6-8 shows a year, no way, don't want it.
It's very exhausting just from knowing you and knowing Brian. It's just like, oh my God. Ugh. I don't know how you guys do it.
Well, that's why the goal would be to be able to get paid to do it during the day rather than doing anything all the time on the sides.
Maybe we covered this. I don't know. But Ryan asks, what were your goals for Schmimprov when you first formed the group? And do you feel like you have achieved what you hope to accomplish with it?
Well, it's still going. So, yes. I don't think we ever had a goal. We just wanted wanted to keep doing it. And we are still doing it after almost 600 shows now? More? 600 mm-hmm. more? Yeah, the fact that we are still doing it, still having fun doing it,
right,
still selling out, that new people are still coming constantly, like a lot of times, you know, especially members in the group too, get in their heads, you know, like, oh, we're so popular, so what's next? Do we, you know, can we get a TV show?
What's
the next big thing?
Yeah.
But I mean, the reality of it is that we're as big as improv normally can get. I mean, if it was possible for a group like this to be have a really successful show, it would have happened already. Like Whose Line worked mm-hmm. for a while. It came on and off the air a couple times. It's one of those shows that, I mean, obviously Whose Line had to be really family friendly. Is it possible that we could get something? Yeah, maybe. But I mean, the big names in improv comedy, you go you go Comedy Sports or UCB or Groundlings, like their improv shows, that's what we're doing too. You know, you have weekly shows that gets sold out and people like it. Like that's what we're as successful as they are in that aspect. I mean, yeah, UCB's got, you know, they've got their hands in some movies and stuff too. And so, I mean, really the only place that Schmimprov could get bigger, aside from maybe being in a bigger venue that could seat more people, but it can't be too much bigger because then we get into only dick humor travels to the back row. right. I mean, the only place it can get bigger is our company of performers moving on to different types of things. If all the Schmimprovers, if we put a movie together, mm-hmm. then it would be like an Improv Schmimprov Presents movie. But I think that as far as the, you know, doing a improv shows, this is what it is. This is what it's always going to be. This is as popular as it should be, and it's great that we can do that. I mean, if these shows at the Brea Improv keep going well, that would be one step up, I would say, because being able to perform on the actual legitimate improv comedy stage and having it be successful, you know, monthly there, I think that would be a great step for us. And that may open the door to other type of projects. Like the more we get legitimacy rather than being in this, you know, basement Fullerton show, if we have, you know, performing regularly at the Brea Improv, then maybe our group, you know, would be more likely to be able to do some more higher end things. But again, those higher end things aren't going to be hey, give me a noun, you know, they're gonna be probably more like sketchish things or movie like things or something different.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think most of us are pretty, like, from where we started, we're just like amazed that we're still doing it. It's like, you know, for me, it's just so cool that it's still around and mm-hmm. like, you know, I can go and do a show, you know, and still be a part of it. Like, it's just, it's really awesome.
And it's fun. Like, it's fun. Like, and I don't know about you, but I still learn every show. I learn mm-hmm. something new about myself and about improv and about comedy. And I mean, it's been a real boon for us to be able to have this, as far as a tool in our comedic growth, like being able to do it twice a week for years gives you a lot of experience both in success and in failures. Like we've all bombed a billion times in Schmimprov. and you know, hopefully less now than in the beginning, but the more you do it, the more you learn, the more you can test things out. Some shows you go in saying, you know what, I was too blue last week.
Right.
I'm going to try a show where I go in and I'm not blue at all. And then maybe that really works for you. Or maybe sometimes I go into a show thinking, okay, you know, I got to drop. I want to try out being a little less logical. I want to try doing more leaps of ridiculousness in this show. So keep that in the back of your head. You know, I'm always still trying things out and trying, you know, the fact that we're able to do that, I think, is the best thing of all of them. And, you know, and some people get burned out and, you know, and they take breaks or leave the group. And if I ever get burned out, I would do the same thing. I'd be like, well, yeah, I'm kind of done for a while.
Yeah.
But once again, you have people who are passionate about it and they get to do it.
It's cool stuff.
Yeah.
You asked, when are we recording this, Nick?
It's a good question.
I, if
I had to say, I would say that we're going to record this today at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Awesome.
That's my answer to that question.
Donish asks, it might be the Donish we know.
I doubt there's another.
How has your life changed because of Sebastian?
Because of Sebastian. Well, realistically, we could take a dark turn here. Sebastian is a good he's a good parable for not letting things go too far. Like when Sebastian came in, he was quirky and he was kind of weird and, you know, had a little bit of a weird sense of humor, really friendly. And we all loved him. We're like, yeah, Sebastian. But the longer he was quirky and weirder, the weirder and quirkier his quirky weirdness got. And eventually he moved away to be a homeless person. And he's probably loving it. He's that kind of guy.
Yeah.
But I think that there is something to be seen in Sebastian as far as grounding yourself. Like you can't be all id. You can't just be like I react. You've got to balance yourself out with you know, rationality, logic, living an actual life. You know, getting jobs, real. You know, doing the right thing and building a financial world for yourself. while pursuing your pursuits in comedy and in performance, because otherwise you end up going off the deep end. I love Sebastian.
We all love Sebastian.
I love him.
In fact, he almost came and recorded a Schmimcast.
Did he really?
Almost. Like it was funny. He visited this a couple months ago. Like, he visited and he like got in contact with me, and I was like, all right, well, let's figure it, because he was like in LA and we were trying to figure a way to get him here so we could record. And he's like, well, maybe someone can come and get me and drive me there. I almost would have gone and got him, but it was like, I won't be ready till 11 p.m. on Wednesday night. And I was like, oh, crap, we'll have to work tomorrow. I'm like, I can't record till 2 in the morning, and I don't think my neighbors would like that.
Right. Oh, man.
Sebastian's a funny guy.
So that's how he's changed my life.
You base your life more in reality.
Yes, make sure that every now and then, if you're acting too weird, say, hey, where are you going with that path? Do you want to be there in 5 years? That's a lesson to other Schmidt Proffers as well.
Someone asked, Audrey asked if you will marry her. I think I know the answer to that one.
If I'll marry Audria?
Not Audria, Audrey.
Oh, Audrey.
I don't know who that is.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe I do.
It's probably a random fan.
I'm really bad with names. I'm good with faces. I'm really bad with names sometimes. Will I marry her? That is, well, what is she offering? Did she?
No.
She didn't offer anything?
Nothing. That says, will you marry me?
I can't promise I will marry her.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
Put something on the table. Audrey.
Audrey, show.
Don't just ask.
Yeah. You gotta prove that you're willing to watch Farscape with me. Mm-hmm. You gotta, I don't know what my...
If you can endow him with some of those X-Men powers, that would be cool.
That is correct.
That would be nice.
I will say one of my requirements is that they be able to beat me at Scrabble, and my girlfriend right now is way too good at that.
Your ass.
Oh, my effing God.
Now, see, that's impressive.
Yeah.
That is very impressive.
Oh, I know.
Now I know why you're together. No, congratulations on having a girlfriend.
Thank you. This is
that's really awesome.
It's actually amazing. We met on chemistry.com. We both
did you?
Yeah, we both signed up for a free communication weekend on chemistry.com, and we met on that one weekend.
And you canceled your subscription after that?
Canceled the subscription.
Just didn't pay.
I mean, never even started a subscription. I only signed up for that weekend.
That's really awesome.
So neither of us ever paid for it. We
see
both,
how smart both of them
right?
are.
We both only went on one date from that weekend. It was with each other, and fucking perfect. Like, for a long time, I always thought, like, the online dating was kind of like, it's kind of weird. You're probably only going to meet a bunch of weird people that are on there for a reason, you know? Mm-hmm. But I will absolutely say now that, that based on my experience right now, is that when they match you, it's because it works. Like, I've never been in a relationship where there's no problems. There's no fighting. Like, we see the world the exact same way, because chemistry was like, hey, guess what? You see the world the exact same way. You guys will probably be paired up. And it's true. Like, we are just down the line compatible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and especially in the drama world, everyone dates each other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's such an incestuous world. People dating within the group, people dating audience members, whatever. And, like... It's kind of the same theory as meeting someone at a bar. Yeah, you meet someone at a bar. Oh, yeah, they're hot. Okay, what are the chances that, A, you're really compatible, you like the same thing, is that you're in the same place in life, that you react the right way to be interactive with each other? It's almost impossible. What are the odds are astronomical. So to be able to go to a site that says, hey, we'll take that part out of it. We will say we'll find someone who will react the same way as you, who is in the same place in life and looking for the same thing. Look at it now, and it's a no-brainer. Like, oh my god! So to see everyone's relationships that are always struggling and like so much fighting and drama and the incest of it all, and then everyone's like, oh well, I can't do a show if that person's going to be there.
Oh, I know.
Or they're going to be in that show, so I'm not going to be at the theater for the next 2 months. Blah blah blah. I hate it.
Yeah.
So the fact that I found something that is amazing and is outside of the theater world and is perfect for me, I think everyone should sign up to chemistry.com. Or some dating website. They're not just weirdos. They are real people.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. Congratulations. Thank you. I admire that because but I've been sadly single for like a year now. So
sign up, Niggy. Do it.
Maybe I will.
Do it. I'm telling you, you are a charming, nice guy. I mean,
because podcasting.
I was single for 6 months, and I was like, oh man,
yeah.
I'm never gonna find anyone. I'm effing 30 now, and I'm single again. I mean, 3 years ago, I was happily living with a girlfriend, and now I'm back to living with a roommate. And oh, no one's gonna want me now, you know. You can do it too, Niggy.
All right,
do it.
Right. I have faith and momentum now.
Yeah.
Farnosh wants to know, how did you manage to make an apartment-sized version of Risk? We talked about it earlier. So how did you do that?
I guess the word apartment-sized is slightly inaccurate.
Well, if it was my apartment, it would be.
Yeah, it's true.
It's more of a bedroom.
The entire size of the board would probably be approximately maybe 16 feet long and maybe 10 feet tall. So yeah, so you could fit it in a room. I gridded out. I scanned the Risk board into a computer. I gridded it out. I blew it up. I cut the continents out of MDF. That's medium density fiberboard. you can get it at Home Depot. It's kind of like homosote.
Whoa.
Those are some big lumber words there.
I was like, what does MDF stand
MDF,
for?
That's right. The good thing about MDF is that it doesn't have any grain to it. It's made out of composite of other wood scraps. So it's all like, it's basically like fine wood particles smashed together and pressed and glued. So it's kind of a uniform density. So medium density fiber board. Mm-hmm. And so I cut the shapes out of that, and then I beveled all the edges. And I routed out the territories on the top. Then I painted them and spray painted them with different letters, or spray painted them with their titles. Then I bought army men and spray painted them for all the pieces. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's pretty impressive. You still have it?
I still have it. Haven't played in years.
I remember I borrowed it from you for a show that we
That's right.
did.
That's
ages.
Right.
The one show I've done outside of the Maverick in all of these last decade or whatever. Did one show outside of the Maverick.
I did one show outside. Outside the Maverick too, over at the Orange Curtain
Theater. Was it South County?
South County. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I've auditioned for a couple of other shows, and like one of them, I think I got cast in, and I was like, nah. And then another one, I didn't get cast in, and I was like, nah. So there you go.
Same reaction with victory and success.
Yeah. All right. And Farnosh has one more question.
Right.
She says, "Tell us about the time you spit on your own back." I don't even remember. What it was this. Was this at your roast or no?
I have no idea.
It sounds familiar to me,
right?
Too.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I think that did happen.
Spit on my own back.
It didn't. Did it happen at your roast at the chance, maybe?
I do not know.
I can think of, but I don't know.
It's clearly sounds possible. It's probably a really funny story. I do not recall it at all.
Oh, no idea. Oh, well.
Sorry on that one.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes story, you know, like, all the time people will be like, hey, do you remember that game you did where you were a priest? And I'm like, no, I don't. I don't remember every game from the last nearly 500 shows. It's probably something like that.
So I guess we should mention here that you are coming upon your 500th
I
show.
I am almost on my 500th
so,
show.
So we're going to have another roast because at the 100th show, we do a roast.
Yeah.
And so you and Jamie.
Me and Jamie both.
Are close to 500.
Because our 100th show was so long ago, one remembers it.
So
yours too. Yours was back then too. You're like the three of us. We all hit
it was
hit
right
100
around the
right
same time. So what is going to be in like October, November?
November, the week after Shrimprov Idol. So I want to say that's like November 13th, 14th ish.
Okay.
The Friday night is going to be me, and the Saturday night is going to be Jamie. Technically, I'm probably going to hit 500 before him because, but I don't really count the all puppet challenges because I'm not playing for Shrimprov.
Right, right.
But if you include those, I would. You know, I've got five or six more shows on my belt, but I'm not including
those. Well, that should be fun. And maybe, I know we talked about it, but maybe we'll set up the microphone and so we can actually, we'll just turn it into a podcast.
Oh, yeah, we talked about that.
So,
because
I think it would be relatively easily done.
Yeah, we just got to record the audio. Everyone uses a microphone in it. It'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Roasts are insane, usually.
Yeah. Part of me doesn't know, like, I feel like my life is so much more sane
than it used to be,
you know? Like, everyone's going to say I'm a big old asshole. That's I get it. I'm honest. I'm an asshole. I tell people the truth about their lives, and I find cruel humor to be funnier than being nice to people. So I get it. I'm an asshole. That's fine. But other than that, I've turned a girl lesbian, so that's going to show up. But other than that, I mean, I've got like a normal job, and at least now I do. I've got a normal girlfriend. I've got a pretty normal life.
Well, we'll just see what,
happens.
We'll see people come up with. I mean, it's harder because, like, for some people, because some people in Shrimprov have not known you for that long, but there's newer ones, and then there's people who have been around for, you know, since it started. So to see how it goes.
All right.
I'm nowhere near that 500 mark,
right?
I'm like 200, maybe?
Yeah. You don't play as much these days. Jamie are still in it almost every weekend.
Like, yeah. If you're not playing and then you're hosting.
Yeah. That's true. What's next? Was that all the questions?
That's all the questions.
All the questions.
So, like we talked about, you are one of the All Puppet players. So, and we have a big ass show coming up, right?
Big ass show.
Big ass show.
Big ass titties.
Furry ones, too. Big furry titties. Big eyes. No legs. Sounds so hot.
That's true. It's coming up October 8th at the Bray Improv.
That's right.
11 o'clock. Now, normally that's normally the Shrimprov night at Maverick, but so we're going to be dark at the Maverick on that night. So go to the Bray instead of the Maverick.
That's right.
We used to have Saturdays, random Saturdays off the Maverick anyway, so it's not that weird. So don't freak out. Just go to the Bray that night.
Yeah, help us pack the house there at the Bray Improv.
Yeah.
It's going to be two Shrimprovers versus two All Puppet Players.
Yeah, Patrick Hine and Jason Booth. Some cream of the crop there. Those guys are both very good. These shows continue to go well over there. We may become a regular staple. So
yeah, and that's a great. I mean, that's a really good slot too. 11 o'clock on a Saturday night.
Absolutely.
You know, you'll be following up whatever they got going on before that.
Yeah. But
the great thing about the Bray Improv is you got table service, waiters, beer food,
booze, food, and they even said that afterwards they don't mind keeping the bar open and drinking.
Really?
Because afterwards, last time we did the show and then we were all like, well, let's go over to Yard House and drink.
The
owner was like, fuck, man, you could drink here. Shit. What? Next time, why don't we just stay open long, you know?
Right.
Because normally, you know, they're not used to that. They're not used to people kind of
hanging out afterwards. Yeah. Plus, that was like a Tuesday night or something like that. Right?
Yeah. So that's going to happen. You can get your tickets at www.improv.com/comedyclub/Brea or go to www.improvschmidprov.com and follow a link there, probably.
Follow the links.
Follow the links or find either one on Facebook.
That's right.
Improv or the Brea Improv. You can get free tickets a lot through the Facebook for Brea Improv. They do that a lot. They'll throw out those free ticket offers because, you know, you still got to pay two drink minimum, but keep your eyes open for those.
So will that be just through the Schmimprov page or through the Brea Improv?
Through the Brea Improv. Okay, Brea Improv offers free tickets a lot.
And they have a Facebook page too.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, cool. Yeah. I didn't even know that. That's awesome.
Now you know.
That's where I'm going to get my tickets. And then if you want to come see some really awesome theater, we have tons of awesome theater going on at the Maverick, as well as Schmimprov every Friday and Saturday night.
That's right.
Night of the Living Dead opens up September 30th, plays through the end of October.
Yeah.
So that show's so much fun. And then Frankenstein Has No Legs.
That's the next puppet production.
Puppet Players.
It's a fairly honest recounting of Mary Shelley's original novel. Mm-hmm. However, as usual, puppets are distracted by things. So they are going to be trying to do a very good performance of Frankenstein, but, you know, every now and then they may get distracted, and so it'll still be funny as well as scary and dramatic.
That's what's so great about the Hamlet that you guys did, and then this. It's going to be, it's not just the story, but it's so much fun, and it's so funny to see puppets acted out. It's really a good theater experience.
It's unique to do, too.
Yeah. And it's not like your typical theater experience. It's not like you're going to see Our Town or something, you know. It's like, I think people, the masses, you know, that don't even go to theater would totally dig this kind of thing.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. Because you don't know what you're in for, and so whatever happens is exciting. Because when it's dramatic, it works, and when it's funny, it works too.
Yeah.
And that's not always true, because with puppets, they just have that magical element that they can get away with both. So that runs November 4th through the 20th, I believe.
So, but 3 weeks, 4 weeks.
Three weekends. Fridays and Saturdays at 8:00, Saturdays and Sundays at 4:00.
I imagine that's going to be sold out in with only 3 weekends.
We really hope so, because we're putting more money into this show than we did for Hamlet. Hamlet was pretty cheap, but this one we've jobbed out some professional Muppet builders to build our creature and our Frankenstein. So we've got some high end puppets coming in, and the set's going to be a bit more complicated than Hamlet was, so more money's going in, so hopefully more money's going to come back to us. So come and see the show.
It sounds like it's going to be awesome.
Yeah. And then Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. Was this our sixth year doing that
show? We
didn't
even talk about it. That's so funny. But yeah, Nate plays the ultimate villain, Voldar, the evil Martian.
And Nick McGee plays Santa Claus himself,
right.
The jolly fat man.
Yes. So that's always a laugh riot and fun.
Another show that's scripted, but then lots of improv around it.
Yeah.
We fuck with each other. We fuck with the audience.
Perhaps this year will be even more off the wall. We're just not going to rehearse at all this year.
I hear that our opening night is going to be our first run through, which sounds exciting.
That'll be great.
So come to that opening night. That's going to be a fun night.
And next year we have Robin Hood and the Hobbit to look forward to. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Next year should be pretty awesome.
I think so.
I have a feeling it's going to be great. So, well, shit. I'm sorry I went over an hour and a half. God damn it, Nate. Thank you for doing this.
No problem. Thanks for having
me. So awesome to have you over at my amazing apartment.
Let's play Wii Fit. Two of us side by side in the kitchen.
And we can watch a movie at the same time.
Yeah.
On a monitor next to the That's what I do. My life is so pathetic. I have on the Wii Fit and I watch movies.
Is that all you're playing? Are you playing any other video games right now? I haven't played anything in a while.
Yeah, we've got a girlfriend now.
I do. Awesome. You know what? But that's not what's been keeping. Writing scripts and doing graphic design stuff has been really keeping me really busy and video game free. But Assassin's Creed comes out in November.
Oh my God!
So I'll be playing that.
It's a new sequel to it, or
the fourth Assassin's Creed.
Oh my God!
Yeah. Oh, the show. That's just the best video game in the world. And I might pick up Skyrim. Skyrim looks good too.
What is Skyrim?
It's in the next Elder Scrolls. I didn't play any of the Elder Scrolls, but I liked the Fallout series, and it's the same company.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha. That's an RPG though, right?
Yeah,
that's a long game.
It's a huge game.
Can you really commit to that?
Well, that's the thing. Like I can't. But since I haven't played video games in months now, I'm jonesing.
You have an excuse too. You're like, oh, it's been so long.
That's right. Well, I haven't played in like 3 months, so. Yeah, we'll see. I gotta re-nerd at some point.
All right, man. Well, thank you again.
Thank you, Nick McGee.
Thank you so much.
Next time we'll talk about the roommates we've kicked out over the years.
We totally. I think we'll. So cool. Yes, and like I said, anytime, or I didn't say this yet, but I will say it now. Oh. Anytime you want to come back and talk or promote something,
amen.
Like, yeah.
Let's do it.
Come over and, you know, we can talk about it and we can talk about Wii Fit. And
yeah. We should do a podcast while we're Wii Fitting.
Why not? Actually, I should say Nate is the reason I get to do this, because I was like, I don't really want to do a podcast, and I don't know, I'm like, what can I talk about? What can I do? I was like, how we do a Schmimprov podcast? That'd be so cool. And so I like wrote an email to Nate and Jamie, and I was like, I really like podcasts, and they're fun and they're neat, and I was thinking it would be neat to have an improv Schmimprov podcast. And Nate was like, I don't know anything about podcasts, so that's cool. Go ahead.
Yeah. Like, so, I mean, again, it's the same theory that I have in, like, for everything. Like, just do it. Just do it and then make it happen. Like,
yeah,
that's the way to do everything in life.
So thank you for allowing me to do this. And
thank you for doing it.
It's enjoyable.
Now go fund Cheerleaders Must Die. Oh, wait.
Yeah, I know.
I thought it was Curtis Henderson for a second.
That's right. And you can go to the Kickstarter page. And so hopefully it's a good forum for people to come on and just talk about whatever they want to talk about. And yeah, it's fun.
This was mostly a history lesson. Next
keeps
time
me busy.
Next time we'll talk about deep hitting personal issues and political ramifications.
String theory.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, don't get me.
We missed that.
I'll go all crazy on you as far as the relativity. But string theory, I think string theory is blow.
You think it's bullshit?
I think it's retarded.
Doesn't have to do with like no, we're going on string theory.
Yeah, it's in all the dimensions of the universe are in
harmony,
membranes
kind of,
that you can't even actually visualize. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about it next time. We'll talk about the origins of the world and why religion is dumb and things like that.
Is string theory the one where there's a different universe is created for every possible situation?
I hate that theory much.
It sounds like such bullshit.
It's retarded because here's why I really hate it. Is when people talk about alternate universes, they talk about things like, well, what if there was a universe where Hitler won? Mm-hmm, or what if there's a universe where Obama was assassinated? I don't know. They talk about these alternate universes as if they're watching Sliders, and mm-hmm. all the universes are drastically different. But here's the thing. When you think about alternate universes, everything that happens, if it went in any slightly different way, then it creates an alternate universe.
Right.
So, there, I mean, the word infinite at this point is too hard to comprehend, because mm-hmm. when you really think about it, like, what if right now you blink? Or mm-hmm. what if you don't blink?
Right.
Okay, so that's one possibility of a blink. Now, that happens every 5 milliseconds, let's say. How long does it take to blink? Maybe half a second. So mm-hmm. every half a second, there's a possibility of you blinking and you not blinking, which would create an infinite new world. So that's possible for every half second of your day. Multiply that by every other human being on the planet and every human being that's ever been on the planet. All those, and those are just the possibilities of blinking. What if your finger twitches? What if you look to the left rather than the right? There's an infinite number of things that you can do at every second. Multiply that by all the infinite people in the world and all the people that have been, and then by every person within each one of those infinite universes. Like, it's not just spawning off this world. Every one of those universes, what if that person blinked? What if your friend next to you blinked in that one? It's ridiculous. It's not just did Hitler win.
Yeah,
It's literally that there are... It's retarded. It's retarded. And the idea that there are that many universes that exist, and their theory that we actually exist in all of them simultaneously is bullshit. It's so stupid, and it's pointless to even theorize about, because it doesn't affect our world. It doesn't affect anything we do. Oh, I hate it. Multiple universe theory is so pointless.
Well, next time we will get
into
that.
We'll talk about that.
That's just a primer.
Like I said, today was a history lesson on Schmimprov. Next time, we'll delve into things I think about.
All right. Thank you for listening to Schmimcast, everybody. Thank you, Nathan McCarrick, for being on Schmimcast.
Thanks, audience.
All right. Come see us at the Bray Improv.
Yeah.
And have fun with life.
All right. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Hey-ya.
Thank you for listening to Schmimcast. Remember, for the latest episodes of Schmimcast, please visit www.schmimcast.com. You can email us at schmimcast@aol.com. And hit us up on Twitter at Schmimcast. It's SHMIMCAST. That's twitter.com/Schmimcast. And now...
I wanna fuck you in the ass.
I'm two names above Penis McGee.
You can hear the flame from Justin's asshole.
Cheerio.
Yeah. I don't remember.
Oh, shit. Now I snorted. That's good.
All right. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Hey-ya. Smearcast.